General name, Reel 10. Now, the first of the 1915 operations you were involved with was Battle of Neuve Chapelle. Could you tell me something about the sort of preparations for that battle which you, as a sapper, were involved in?
The chief work was the preparation of assembly trenches for the infantry to shelter in immediately before the battle, because the whole of the infantry of the division had to crowd into the forward area on a narrow front, and that result was there had to be lines of mostly breastwork or very shallow trenches owing to the waterlogged nature of the ground, and these were laid out and constructed under the supervision of the sappers. Well, that was the chief thing, and another was the provision of approach tracks leading up to the front, but of course that had to be done with due thought as to concealment, a certain amount of duckboard approaches, that's to say wooden slats fixed to wooden runners, had to be put over ditches and so on, so as to give a suitable approach to these assembly trenches. That was the chief work.
Did the assembly trenches have any particular features as compared with other kinds of trenches?
Well, they were not nearly so elaborate. They merely had to give shelter for a few hours, so they were not so deep, or rather breastworks are not so high, so they didn't require so much work or so much earth as the frontline breastworks.
Good, fine. Now, before the attack at Neuve Chapelle by the British Army began, I believe there was a remarkably intense artillery bombardment.
Yes, the bombardment was the most impressive that I think I heard throughout the war. It was quite brief, and it had only a limited amount of heavy artillery. It was nearly all field gun fire, but in the short period that it took place, the guns were fired at such a rapid rate that the noise was absolutely shattering. And where it was accurate against the German breastworks, it had a most decisive effect and kept the Germans down, and our advancing infantry suffered only moderate losses.
On your particular sector of the front, did the artillery bombardment do its job?
On the left part of the brigade on which I was working, the artillery bombardment failed. I believe it was due to the fact that the batteries operating there had only come into their positions at the last moment and had not been able to register properly beforehand. That's to say, they'd not had the opportunity of firing shots the day before or 2 days before to accurately align their guns onto the proper target. The result was the German trenches opposite the left part of the attack that I was concerned with were not damaged, and the left battalion of the infantry brigade I was concerned with was decimated when they got up and clambered over our breastwork. To my horror, I saw them practically mown down. The right-hand part of the brigade, the battalion there, went forward with very few casualties.
Had you ever seen anything quite as disastrous as the effect of the German, particularly machine gun fire, on those infantry forces?
Throughout the war, I never saw such dreadful casualties as occurred on that particular bit of front.
First Ypres is often described as the sort of graveyard of the British regular army, isn't it?
Yes.
Now, after the Neuve-Chapelle battle, I believe that the engineers were addressed by Field Marshal French.
Mm-hmm.
What effect did his address have upon you? Now, after Neuve-Chapelle, you were concerned with the design and construction for some redoubts or strong points on the front. I'd be very interested to hear in some detail about this work, but perhaps you could start off just by explaining to me why such redoubts or strong points were in fact necessary.
Previously, the trench defences had consisted, to start with, just a front line of trenches where the troops dug themselves in wherever they happened to be held up. Then the next thing was to dig a support line 100 or 200 yards behind, then a reserve line for reserve troops to be brought into in the event of a big battle. And that might be 700 or 800 yards further back. But if there was a breakthrough by an enemy attack, there were no means of bringing crossfire to bear. And so it was decided to build redoubts with all-round fire.
Yes. Could you make this a bit clearer for me, please? Because there was no means of bringing crossfire to bear, what might have happened without redoubts?
The enemy, if they broke through anywhere, could spread out sideways and take the defenders of the front line, which hadn't been attacked. They could be taken in rear and attacked from behind as well as in front, and the enemy's original attack could very soon break up a large part of the front.
Good, I see, very clear. Fine, so the decision was taken to construct these redoubts.
Yes.
Tell me a bit about their design and construction.
The redoubts were well known in siege warfare of previous wars, and they are designed to give all-round defence, trenches with fire bays, oblong. A redoubt is an oblong defence work, usually a bit longer than it is deep, but it is an oblong, a circular, rather oblong defence work, perhaps in the case of these trench warfare redoubts, they might be 100 yards long by 50 yards deep, or various different sizes depending on the circumstances, and fire bays all the way round with fire steps for the troops to get up and man, and of course with shelters with overhead cover inside for them to take shelter in if the place is being shelled by the enemy with shrapnel or with high explosive. And a redoubt was started on our front, and I was in charge of the design and the construction of this.
Mm-hmm. That's fine. So really the redoubt was the first stage by the British Army in the, if you like, sophistication of their trench fortifications from just the crude, straight, not very deep trenches to something much more elaborate.
Yes.
Mm. One thing which does surprise me and interests me is the point which you've made, that these developments were quite well known to the army and had been used in many previous wars.
Yes.
Because very often, I think, people tend to popularly believe that trench warfare was an entirely new concept because it's so publicized in the context of the First World War that too often we tend to forget that most of the techniques which were used there were quite well known and had been quite well developed long before the First World War.
Well, they'd all been developed in what used to be known as siege warfare in the old days, where some fortress was being besieged. The approaches to it always had to be undertaken by the attacking troops digging themselves in and slowly digging trenches forward until they got within assaulting distance.
Mm-hmm.
And that they designed and dug trenches just like we had in this war.
Mm. Now, later in 1915, after the Battle of Neuchâtel, you were appointed as adjutant to Colonel Grant, who was the commander of the Royal Engineers in your sector. And one of your jobs there was to obtain various kinds of supplies which were needed by the British forces.
Mm-hmm.
Why was it necessary to obtain supplies locally at all?
Because the supply of engineer materials from military sources in England primarily consisted of things like barbed wire and steel posts for wire entanglements, sandbags for building up breastworks, and those sort of things which had been used in old days in siege warfare. And, of course, tools like picks and shovels and so on. And in the as this trench warfare developed, masses of timber were acquired, especially for breastworks and for trench boards for making over wet and muddy ground. And the result was a great mass of material had to be bought locally, and workshops were set up by the sappers in practically each divisional area, and in some cases corps and army workshops were set up where various things were manufactured that were required in the trench warfare. And in the case of a division, the adjutant RE, the CRE's staff officer, usually had the job of going round, getting in touch with French contractors and arranging the purchase of whatever was required. And one went quite far afield to get the enormous quantities of material required for this purpose.
What other categories of material did you need, apart from timbers, which you've already mentioned?
Timber, corrugated iron, of course, all sorts of things like screws, nails, also wire.
Any kinds of machinery?
A certain amount of Yes, a certain amount of machinery.
What kind?
We got some circular saws, things required by carpenters doing a large amount of work. All sorts of things required in setting up fairly large-scale workshops.
It sounds as if a large proportion of the army's needs were being met, a larger proportion were being met locally than were being supplied from at home.
Yes, well, that was necessary because the amount of material put into trench warfare, where a division was stationary for a year or more in one place, the amount of material was enormous, and it was impossible to import and carry this all from England, and it was probably just as cheap and easy, in fact far easier to get it locally.
When it was obtained locally, was that a straightforward commercial transaction?
Yes. And the CRE had an expense account which was run by the adjutant, RE, and we disposed of very large sums of money buying all these things from local French contractors, and in some cases contractors in big towns 20, 30 miles away from where our headquarters was.
Great stimulus to local business then.
Oh, yes, yes.